fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me. Let's fly away. Come fly with me. Let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
In the fountain, each one seeking happiness, thrown by three hopeful lovers, which one will the fountain bless? Three hearts in the fountain, each heart longing for its home. There they lie in the fountain, somewhere in the heart of Rome. Which one will the fountain bless? Which one will the fountain bless? Three coins in the fountain, through the ripples how they shine. Just one wish will be granted, one heart will wear a valentine. Make it mine, make it mine. Make it mine. in the fountain, through the ripples how they shine. And just one wish will be granted, one heart will wear a valentine. Make it mine, make it mine, make it mine. Now, day-to-day life is a menu with one item. Week after week tastes the same. But sometimes 1 minute has magic within it, if we might call it by name. I'd say that life is sane, mildly inviting. Business gain always is delighting. Now and then something more exciting enters in. You'll find the temperature is the early warning. You may meet some freezing winter morning, but the heat is California dawning in your brain. And you thought life was sane, so light the flame, lest she wanders past you. What's her name? Insomnia will ask you. Are you game to do the things you never thought you'd do? Let's see how well you move to break the ice. 'Cause underneath that ice, you may find spice. Pick up a history book, a thumb across the pages. Pharaohs, czars, and thinkers through the ages. Kings and slaves were driven into rages by a kiss. So if you're scared to death, well, muster up your reason. Take a breath. It's just that funny season. To refuse must be considered treason in the spring. And do you know her ring size? Think of all the dulls of living quiet. Life a cage with no one passing by it. Healthy brains may need a change of diet now and then. Chinese millions live and die on rice. Bet they'd pop their pointed tops if they ever had spice. The ice and remember spice and my advice, 'cause oftentimes spice is nice.
I have the feeling he really knows what he's talking about. That, ladies and gentlemen, was Frank Sinatra Jr., son of the legendary singer Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra Jr. has been successful as a vocalist and songwriter in his own right. He wrote that one. Yes, he did. Born in New Jersey to Frank and his first wife, Nancy Barbato, Although his father discouraged him from going into the music profession because of the trials and tribulations that went along with it, Frank Sinatra Jr. began a musical career anyway. Gifted with a singing voice similar to his father's, you just heard it, it's amazing. He began performing with the Tommy Dorsey Band in 1963. He later became his father's music director, gaining the advantage of learning his father's style, tone, expressions, delivery, and mannerisms over many nights in concert. In 1988, he also began conducting the orchestra for his father's concerts, which led to the 1996 album As I Remember It, a tribute to the career of his father that included many of his father's famous songs. Frank Sinatra Jr. performed on several television programs during the 70s and also recorded for the Daybreak label, releasing Spice, His Way, It's All Right, and Billy May for President. Now, many of those albums had Nelson Riddle and his orchestra, but Billy May, as you can imagine, took on the last one, Billy May for President. The album that we were listening to was That Face, which was Frank's first album of new material in 10 years, and it was recorded live in Capitol's famed studios and released by Rhino in 2005. And Anything Goes is very pleased and honored to welcome Mr. Frank Sinatra Jr. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for making time for us today. It's a beautiful day here in Teaneck, New Jersey, just 15 miles from where you were born in Jersey City. So welcome home, Mr. Sinatra.
Well, thank you.
You were born in 1944 in Margaret Haig Hospital in Jersey City, and your dad was 3,000 miles away in Hollywood, right? And your name is Franklin Wayne Emanuel Sinatra. Is that correct?
No, that's not.
Okay, correct me then. Let's start right off the bat.
My name is Francis.
I read on the Sinatra family website that you were named actually after FDR. Is that correct?
That is erroneous. That's a fallacy.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So the Sinatra family website, I thought, was put together by your family, maybe by Nancy?
I really have no idea. I'm not connected to it.
Okay, well, forgive me. So that was where I was pointed to. But so I was wondering about that. I thought it was kind of odd. But your father was, in fact, a fan of FDR's. Is that right?
He worked for him.
Okay.
He worked for him during the campaigns and during different problems that arose domestically during the Roosevelt administration.
Oh, that's very interesting. And can you give us a little bit more elaboration on that?
War bond rallies, USO shows in Europe just before the Normandy invasion in 1944.
Uh-huh.
And he did a lot of work for the administration at that time. And then afterwards, during the Truman administration.
Mm-hmm. And did he feel that it was a responsibility of his because he had gained so much fame, or do you have a sense of what motivated your dad to go in that direction?
He was fiercely patriotic.
Hmm.
And he was a very, very serious American when it came to preserving our country.
Wow.
And might serve us all a good example today, I think.
I agree.
This was something that he took very seriously. One of the biggest things that ever happened in his life in that sense was in 1947. In the history books today, it's all but been forgotten other than people who might have been around. South of Houston, there's a community called Texas City, Texas, which is primarily an oil refining facility. It goes on for mile after mile after mile. It is between Houston and Galveston, Texas. And in 1947, there was an infamous explosion in this Texas City oil center that killed many people, blew windows out of buildings miles and miles and miles distant. It was a terrible, terrible catastrophe. And in the middle of the night, Frank Sinatra, who happened to be at Washington, was immediately picked up by the United States Secret Service and taken to the White House, where President Harry Truman called him into his room. And he said, this Texas City situation is a catastrophe. We need relief shows. We need to raise money for these people desperately. And this rather young Frank Sinatra, who was just past 30 at the time, stood there. And here's President of the United States now. And he said, Frank, yours is the greatest mind in the country for this kind of show. Get to work on this problem immediately.
Wow.
And Sinatra said, very appropriately, he said, yes, Mr. President. He had been given a presidential order. And in order to bring relief to the people who were devastated by the Texas City explosion that year, he organized concerts of all the biggest stars in the industry in just about every major city in the country at the time. And that was one of those things that he was called upon to do.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, that's the kind of story, you guys, that you can only get from Frank Sinatra Jr. and the kind of insight that one has from the family. And, of course, we are speaking with Frank Sinatra Jr. here on Anything Goes. And you can see Frank Sinatra Jr. and Steve Tyrell live and in person at NJ Peck this coming Sunday, November 24th at 3 p.m. They're going to be paying tribute to the music of Sammy Kahn, as we have been during this edition of Anything Goes. But I just want to give you guys the heads up about that. We'll be giving you a chance to win some tickets. Mr. Sinatra, what is it like to be born to such a famous father and all the preconceptions that go along with that? It must be very, very tough, especially as a young man.
Actually, it's the other way around.
Okay.
As a child, my family, we were kind of kept isolated from all of that. The attitude was, by my parents, that life is life, and it is the same for everybody. There's right, there's wrong, there's feast, there's famine. You know, there's the extremes that apply to everyone. And as it was, there was a very conscious effort made not to allow anybody to develop this feeling, I'm special. I'm more special than another little girl or another little boy. And my parents were really quite adamant about that, for which I admire them. Now that I'm almost 70, it is certainly, I think, the correct way to look at life in its realistic sense, not in its fabulistic sense. It was only in later years that suddenly you begin to realize that something's very different here.
I understand. But at what age did you turn your attention towards music? And again, according to what I've read, your dad kind of tried to dissuade you because it was so difficult. But did it feel as if you should become a neurosurgeon or anything else other than something that would be in the same direction as your dad?
Well, in my case, I really can't describe it to you with any degree of accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
I was a student of music, as a piano student, from the age of 5. And as it happened, I studied music as a child, as a teenager, and on into college. And when the time came to get into some kind of a career, it just came down to the point that I had to do something that I believed I might have some degree of prowess with. And music was the only thing I could come up with. I tell my friends often when they ask me this, I answer them by saying, I was thinking of becoming chief of staff at General Motors, but I just couldn't think of leaving my old buddies. But that was, I had to do what I felt I might have some degree of knowledge in.
I completely understand that. I completely understand that. And the show that you're doing at NJPAC this coming Sunday, the 24th, is a tribute to the words and music of Sammy Kahn. And you have become one of the leading interpreters of Sammy Kahn's catalog, along with Steve Tyrell, who will be with you. Can you tell us what was Sammy Kahn like? Because Sammy Kahn and your dad were very close, especially in those early years. Is that right?
First of all, thank you for the very nice compliment that you say I become one of the leading interpreters. I've never heard that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sammy Kahn did the words on the music in most instances after his years with Jules Stein. The music came from a fellow out of Syracuse, New York, by the name of Jimmy Van Heusen. Both men, Sammy and Jimmy, coincidentally, were born in 1913. So this is the 100th anniversary of the birth of each of them.
Oh, wow.
And we have prepared a program that features their music and Sammy Kahn's lyrics. Van Heusen did most of the music. And Sammy Kahn was indeed a great, great poet. His use of the English language with wonderful description, but at the same time with great economy. And his songs through the years, somebody told me that through the years of his career, he received from the movies something like 27 Academy Award nominations. And in the process, won 3 Academy Awards. And this is incredible that this much wonderful, wonderful writing came from one man. Sammy Kahn was a terrific man. I can remember him during the days that I was in knee pants. And all through my life, I remember seeing Sammy Kahn and listening and learning from him. He was a brilliant songwriter. At the same time, learning to be romantic, learning to be poignant, learning to be nostalgic with his lyrics as he needed them. But at the same time, he also had a magnificent sense of humor. And it showed up occasionally in his song lyrics, but more frequently, whenever he would write parodies for different occasions. Now, in the program that I'm doing with my friend Steve Tyrell this coming weekend, we are going to do some of these unheard parodies.
Oh, wow.
Which have never been done publicly before. And they are, to say the least, very, very funny. And this was one of his strong points. Somebody said that Sammy Kahn, at one point, was very much like Lawrence Hart when it came to being a great American lyricist. Well, I would say he would be more like Frank Lesser, the man who gave us Guys and Dolls, that he not only has a great sense of romantic poetry, but a terrific sense of humor, which would show up in his lyrics.
And you're tuned into Anything Goes. We're speaking with Frank Sinatra Jr., specifically about the Sammy Kahn Centennial Concert at NJPAC this weekend, the 24th. Why do you suppose, Mr. Sinatra, that Sammy Kahn's name is not quite as well known as the Gershwins or Irving Berlin? Or why is that? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, it never occurred to me that his name was not as well known as the Gershwins or the others. Sammy is, I think, one of the most famous of all of our lyricists in the 20th century. I've never made a comparative study as to who's more famous, but remember that people like Irving Berlin and the Gershwins were becoming famous in the 1920s and the early 30s. Now, in the 20s, music was primarily confined to coming from the Broadway stage. We did have moving pictures, but they were silent.
Mm-hmm.
Movies didn't begin to talk until the end of 1929. Movies began to talk in earnest in 1930. That was when we began to get musical motion pictures. And it was also when, if you look at the career of people like George and Ira Gershwin, they lived in New York all of their lives and were writing for the Broadway stage all through the 20s and on into the 30s. But it was in the 1930s that their careers brought them to Hollywood. Whereas Sammy Kahn came just a little bit later.
Hmm.
Remember that George and Ira Gershwin were born in the 1890s, whereas Sammy Kahn was born in the 19-teens.
Right.
So he was like 15, 16 years younger than those other people. Irving Berlin was also born in the 19th century. And being that much younger, his star, if you want to call it that, did not actually blossom until a proportionate number of years later than the Gershwins and Ira, Irving Berlin. But I think Sammy Kahn is just as famous. The songs that he wrote with Jules Stein, later the songs that he wrote with Jimmy Van Heusen, I think he's just as famous as the others.
The songs are just amazing. High Hopes,
yes.
And The Tender Trap, and Time After Time, and of course your dad's signature song, or one of them, All the Way.
That was one of Sammy Kahn's Academy Awards.
Was it, in fact?
1957.
When you were growing up, Mr. Sinatra, were you just hanging around with remarkable songwriters and arrangers and composers all the time?
No, they did not seek the company of a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old, no.
So you essentially were, maybe they would come to see your dad, but you were not exposed to what was going on, or but
I
a
would
fly
go,
on the wall.
I would go to the recording dates that Frank Sinatra had, and many of them contained songs and lyrics and melodies by, by Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen.
Mm-hmm.
And as a child, I would go to those record dates just to visit Daddy.
Okay.
But when I became a teenager, and when I was in high school, and then in music school in college, now I would go to those situations, and I was taking a lesson. I was going to school.
Okay, so you
and I was learning about lyric writing from Sammy Kahn, and I was learning about melody composition from Jimmy Van Heusen. Now, you played a song a few minutes ago called Spice, which I wrote from my first record album with Nelson Riddle, and that goes back to 1971,
mm-hmm.
Well over 40 years ago now. And when we had finished recording that song, I had the occasion to play a copy of it for Jimmy Van Heusen, who I had known, as I mentioned to you, like Sammy Kahn, since I had been in Knee Pants. And I told Jimmy that I had just made my first album with Nelson Riddle and included some songs that I had written. He said, I want to hear them. I played a tape recording of that song you just played on your show. And when it was over, Van Heusen said, let me hear it again. And he stopped me every so. He said, what was that line? And I would have to back the tape up, and he'd listen to it again. Finally, after 4 passes of the song, he looked at me, and he smiled, a little bit paternally even. And he said, well, it seems Sammy and I taught you pretty well. And it's a moment I'll never forget. I said, yes, Jim, I think both of you did.
Wow. That must have just pleased you down to the core of your
being.
Yes,
it did, because that song you just played, the melody and the lyric were, and I didn't realize it at the time, were very much in the school of Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. You know what? We'd have to do a study here and check that out. But I thank you for pointing that out. Can you tell us, Mr. Sinatra, on Come Fly With Me, the Sammy Kahn Centennial Concert, are you using the great charts from
your dad's library?
Oh, boy.
We are using the original orchestrations other than the ones that Steve Tyrell will be doing. Steve recently released a very fine record album of all Sammy Kahn lyrics, and he will be using his own orchestrations. But we will have, I think we have a 44-piece orchestra, and it should be an interesting concert because of the fact that there are so many stories about Sammy Kahn, about the situations that came to him in his life. And I think the show could be quite entertaining. Steve is a wonderful performer, and I have said often, people who have never heard Steve Tyrell have never been exposed to a Texas blues singer.
Huh.
And which is what Steve Tyrell is. He hails originally from Houston. And he is a Texas blues singer who has done very, very well with this specific kind of music. And it is just wonderful. Producer John Schreiber, the man who is the general manager at the Performing Arts Center over there, who I have worked for before in the past, he is the one who put this show together. And I think he did a very, very smart thing by including Steve Tyrell, because it adds another dimension, another color to the music that we will be doing.
Wow. The more you tell us about the show, the more wonderful it sounds. I want to let everybody know that you can get tickets by logging on to njpac.org or calling 1-888-GO-NJ-PAC. Now, I know, Mr. Sinatra, you've been very generous with your time. I'm wondering, do you have a little bit more time for us? I'd love to play you performing a Sammy Kahn tune and then speak with you a little bit more. Would that be all right, sir?
Certainly.
Oh, thank you so very much. I've got Walkin' Happy queued up. Would you like to share?
Which will be in the show on Sunday.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to share about that, or just that it's going to be in the show?
Well, you may, being a singer yourself, at least I assume that's what you are, when
yes,
you say
sir.
You're working with the great Russ Kassoff.
Oh, thank you. My goodness.
you know that Walkin' Happy was the title of a Broadway musical that was written by Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen, I believe about 1966, and the original recording that was the biggest record on it was Miss Peggy Lee at the time.
Oh.
And we will be doing, I can remember, in New York City, forgive me for digressing, there used to be a wonderful, wonderful nightclub atop the RCA building in Rockefeller Center. It's called the Rainbow Grill.
Oh, yes, we miss it so.
Uh-huh, and I used to play there during those years. And when Van Heusen was in New York, he would come into the show, and we would do Walkin' Happy, and he would just sit there rocking his head back and forth, because, as you will hear, the arrangement swings pretty heavy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Sinatra. I'm having such a good time. Thank you so much for allowing us to spend time with you today and hear from That Face, you guys, is a Sammy Kahn composition performed by Frank Sinatra Jr., and the song is Walkin' Happy here on Anything Goes. And we'll be back with more with Frank Sinatra Jr. on the other side of this song.
There's a kind of walk you walk when the world's undone you. There's a kind of walk you walk when you're feeling proud. There's a kind of walk you walk when the neighbors shun you. There's a kind of walk you walk, sets you above the crowd. There's a kind of walk you walk when somebody loves you. And it's very much like walking on a cloud. Good fortune's found you, chappie. Yes, the world's a happy Valentine. When you're walking happy, don't let the crazy world seem just fine. Another very special walk when the world's all rainbows and your heart is a hopping just like a popping jay. So you had better believe it, chappy. The world could be so finger snappy. The day you learn that to walk in happy brings your heart a shine. So just keep walking happy with your hand in mine, with your hand in mine, with your hand in mine.
Yeah, as Mr. Sinatra said, that swings pretty good, walking happy. Oh, my goodness, you sound an awful lot like your dad on that track, sir.
Well, it seems to be happening more and more the older I become.
Do you think so?
Oh,
that's
yes.
Really,
yeah.
Interesting. And how does that feel?
Well, what can I tell you? You know, time is not a friendly companion.
Or as Betty Davis said.
Mm-hmm.
I understand completely. And when you were growing up, did you see your dad a lot?
No.
No?
No. He was working. He was making records. He was doing television. He was doing radio. He was doing concert tours. He was making, as a rule, 2, sometimes 3 movies a year. And he would fight to actually find time to come home. And then in that process, he would come to visit his children.
Wow.
And it was something, you know. It's amazing if you consider how little time we take to smell the roses when we have youth in our possession.
It's like the quote from It's a Wonderful Life.
Or something like that.
Youth is wasted on the wrong people.
I didn't mean to be mushy at this hour of the day.
No, sir. Well, actually, here we're actually approaching lunchtime, so we can take it.
Well, at lunchtime, people are drinking iced tea and buttermilk, and during it's later in the day when they start drinking scotch and vodka.
And can you tell us a little bit, you have an older sister and a younger sister, and your mom is still with us, Nancy Barbato, is that correct, sir?
My mother will be 97.
Go
in the spring.
Nancy, that's beautiful.
And it's actually quite remarkable, because she has no longevity in her family at all. Both her parents were dead before they were 65.
Wow.
And she comes up now to mid-90s, entering late 90s, and I tell her often, you have proven that it can be done. If you take care of yourself, it's amazing. If you follow the maintenance plan.
The maintenance plan.
Well, I mean, look at it like this, son. People go to a car dealer, and they put down a lot of money, and they buy a shiny new car. And And you open the glove compartment in any new car, and there's a little booklet that says maintenance schedule. Do this at 3,000 miles, do this at 6, do this at 10, do this at 15, do this at 20, and so on. And in order to protect the financial investment, they follow the car's maintenance plan, so the car will last a long time. Now, most people will do that with their car. They don't bother to do it with their own bodies. And she has steadfastly followed the maintenance plan. And I say to her, that's why you're still here.
Wow.
You never smoked. You never drank to any kind of excess. Never at any time did you indulge in any kind of drugs or overeat or anything. You never got fat. And that's why you're still here.
Does that kind of discipline run through the whole, it's through the family?
I most certainly hope it will.
Okay, fair enough. And what about Tina and Nancy? Have you got a little quick update for us about your sisters?
My sister Nancy is, at this moment, celebrating the 2.5-year life of her first grandchild.
Oh, nice.
She finally has a grandchild, and she is also preparing for 2015, which will be the celebration of the 100th birthday of Frank Sinatra.
Mm.
She is preparing a television documentary at that time about his life.
Wow.
Then my younger sister, Tina, is involved with preparing a motion picture theatrical feature, which is to be coming out about that same time.
Wow, so 2015, we can expect a lot from
right,
the Sinatra
will be,
sisters.
That will be the 100th anniversary of the birth of Frank Sinatra.
Oh, wow. That, you know, thank you for the heads up. I sort of knew that, but now my brain just went, oh, okay, fair enough. And as you approach your 70th birthday, how do you... You've shared some wisdom with us, and do you feel successful in your life, sir?
No, I don't.
No.
No. To be successful in this life, I really believe, means that within whatever business you have chosen is to be accepted by your peers. In my case, in this business, as you know so very well being part of it, you are accepted if you've got trophies to prove it.
Hmm.
And more now we have People's Choice Awards, we have this award, we have that award. I have never won an Oscar, I have never won a Grammy, I have never won an Emmy, never been nominated for any such thing. I have never had a hit movie, never had a hit television show, never had a hit record. And I am now in my 52nd year of doing this. So I would say, speaking very honestly, I have been able to continue to work, but I would never describe myself as having been a success.
I understand where you're coming from. I have these conversations with many friends compatriots about whether what is success, and does it have to be about the trophies? Because one can live a successful life and not have those trappings,
oh, yes.
Right?
I think success in this business, as in any other, means acceptance by your peers, by your colleagues.
Mm. Well, do you have any other personal truths to share with us after... You know, after these years, or, you know, what Oprah would call things you know for sure?
I wonder. Things you know for sure.
That's a tough question.
I don't believe it's an accurate question.
Okay.
What I know for sure may not correspond to what you know for sure. Something that is for sure is subjective in the eye of the evaluator.
Wow.
You remember the statement about beauty being in the eye of the beholder?
Uh-huh.
Well, something for sure is in the eye of the evaluator. What I regard as something that is sure, if I put it by you, you might say, well, now, wait a minute, I'm not sure that it's that way. I think we're talking about subjectivity here.
Fair enough, but there are things that you feel that you know for sure in your heart that are worth sharing, and you must share them with your. You have a son named Michael, right?
What do they say is for sure? Death and taxes. Those are for sure.
I guess, all right, fair enough.
Those are absolutely for sure.
All right, how about this one, Mr. Frank Sinatra Jr.? And if you're just joining us, let me tell you that you are tuned into Anything Goes. I'm Lise Avery. We're speaking with Frank Sinatra Jr., who will be in concert at NJPAC this coming Sunday, November 24th, paying tribute to the timeless words and music of Sammy Kahn with Steve Tyrell and the lush accompaniment of the 36-piece New Jersey Symphony Chamber Orchestra. So, Mr. Sinatra, my question is, what of all of the people that you have interacted with in your time, can you tell us any stories about someone that would surprise us, something that we would like to know that you think you would like to share about your dad or anybody else that you have come in contact with?
I really couldn't believe... oh boy. Gee, I don't know what to tell you. I can remember one morning I appeared on a local television show in a fairly large American city. And I was giving a concert with the United States Air Force Symphony Orchestra at the Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. And it was a gratis concert that the Air Force does during the winter months each Sunday. I hope they still do it. This was many years ago. And because it was gratis, people could just walk in. I got up on the stage and I said, in keeping with Washington's policy at this moment of cutting back on federal expenditures, I am... the economy model of the Sinatra line. I said, not one of you can go to the box office when this show is over and demand your money back, because there was no charge to come in. The Air Force did this gratis. And I said, as a kind of a throwaway line that morning, I said, oh yes, I am very, very much economic minded. Ralph Nader loves me. So as I was leaving the set, when they went into a commercial and I got up and started walking out, I ran right into the next guest standing there, who was Ralph Nader.
Oh, no.
And he put out his hand and he said, yes, as a matter of fact, you plead my case very well.
Oh, my heavens. Oh, you know, I you have been so extraordinarily generous with your time, and I hope that you will grace us again with your incredible wisdom, generosity, and all the wonderful stories that you have to share, Mr. Sinatra. I could stay on the phone with you for another hour, but I figure you might want to have some breakfast in California. I have queued up a song, a duet of you and Steve Tyrell of Girl Talk, which, of course, not written by Sammy Kahn, but it's you and Steve, and I wanted to get to that, this one written by Neil Hefti and Bobby Troup. Can you set that up for us, sir?
Let me think now. I knew both the late Bobby Troup very well and the late Neil Hefti. As a matter of fact, in that album that you're playing Girl Talk from, there is a photograph in the notes of Neil Hefti and I at the actual recording date.
Huh.
And it goes back to, let me think now, the song goes back to about 1965, in which there was a film called Harlow about the life of the great movie starlet from the 30s, Jean Harlow.
Okay.
And this was the song that was written for that picture. And when we were making the album That Face, I had been on Steve Tyrell's Sinatra album as a guest. He was good enough to come on my album as a guest for Girl Talk. And I'm trying to remember. I think it was 1965 that the movie Harlow came out. This was a little setting of two men who meet in a saloon, and we're having a drink and toasting the girls.
Ah, that's a fantastic setup.
Well, listen to the beginning and the end of the song, and you'll hear what I mean.
Mr. Sinatra, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to I'm going to see you on Sunday and hopefully meet you on Sunday. And thank you so much. I hope that we'll get a chance to do this again.
Say hello. If you come over there, say hello.
I promise I will. Okay. You've got a promise, and I hope we get to do this again. Thank you so much for your time, you guys, from Francis Sinatra Jr. and Steve Tyrell. Here's some girl talk for you here on Anything Goes. And don't forget, we'll be giving you a chance to win tickets to this wonderful show. So don't you move a muscle. I'm Lisa Avery. This is Anything Goes.
Hey, Francis.
Steve?
You having a drink? Can I join you, man?
Sure. What do you think we ought to drink to?
Let's drink to the girls, brother.
Yeah, and one of their favorite pastimes.
Yeah.
They like to chat about the dresses they will wear tonight. They chew the fat about their tresses or the neighbors fight.
Inconsequential things that men would never care to know become essential things that women find so apropos.
But that's a dame.
It's still the same.
It's all a game. They call it girl talk. Girl talk.
They all meow about the ups and downs of all their friends.
The who, the why, the how, they're dishing the dirt and it never ends.
The weaker sex, the speaker sex, we mortal males behold.
And though we kick, we'd never trade you for a mint of gold.
So baby, stay and talk away, but hear me say that after girl talk, talk to me. Silly things. Their SUVs they love to squeeze through traffic far too near.
But when they do, they've got a cell phone stuck upside their ear.
They know it's brash.
They'll risk a crash to fill their passion, which is girl talk. Girl talk.
They're independent. Is their favorite thing that they possess.
They think their woman's strength will get them out of any mess.
They never fear to take the thought of ending up alone.
'Cause now they've learned they have a feminine testosterone.
Yeah. But baby, try, remember why you need a guy. So after girl talk, talk.
So long, Steve. See you next time.
Yeah, man.
Set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody. So you gave him your heart too, just as I gave mine to you, and you broke it in little pieces. Now how do you do? So you lie awake singing the blues all night. Goody, goody. So you think that love's a barrel of dynamite. Hooray and hallelujah, you had it coming to you. Goody, goody for him, goody, goody for me. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal, you.